Noel Bostock is a 10-year-old boy whose world is being turned upside down by war. He's evacuated from his bohemian London neighborhood during the Blitz to small-town St. Albans. He's taken in by a woman called V. Sedge and her idle son and impassive mother. They survive a war in which the enemy is not always German bombers overhead, but pointy-headed bureaucrats and pettifoggers. The story of their survival is at the heart of Crooked Heart, a new novel by Lissa Evans. And Lissa Evans, who's been both a doctor and a comedy producer for the BBC before she began to write books for children and adults, joins us from London. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
What are the folks in this unlikely duo see in each other?
They see nothing at first. When we first meet Noel, he is living in a very loving household with his godmother Mattie, who's an ex-suffragette. But at the start of the war, his godmother Mattie dies.
You gave that away!
Oh, no!
Go ahead.
Happens quite early on. Do you want me to backtrack?
Spoiler alert. No, no, it's your book.
Noel is evacuated just outside London to a city called St. Albans, a very small city. And there, because he's slightly odd-looking, because he's got a slight limp, because he's not talking, he's not one of the first children to be picked. He's taken round all the houses. And he's chosen by Vera Sedge, who is a woman, as you say, living in straitened circumstances, and who sees in Noel a possible helper to the dodgy schemes by which she lives. And as he becomes interested in what she is doing, he realises that he can help, and it wakes him up emotionally, and they become a scamming duo.
There's a delightful section I want to get you to read about when Noel and a group of big city London kids are being evacuated to the outer provinces. They don't know where during the Blitz. If you could read that section.
Yes, sure. I am sitting next to Harvey Madeley. His backside is so enormous that he is wearing his father's trousers cut down into shorts. "Where are we going, sir?" asked someone. "All very hush-hush," said Mr. Waring. "I have not been party to the plans. Is it Wales?" "Let us hope not." "They don't speak English in Wales," said one of the Ferris twins. "The only discernible difference between the Ferris twins," wrote Noel, "is that one of them is even more cretinous than the other." "They eat squirrels in Wales," said the other Ferris twin. "I won't go anywhere with cows again," said Alice Beddoes. "In Dorset I could see a cow out of every window, and I could smell a cow out of every window."
That's a wonderful section that that helps us understand how their worlds were shaken up. They were safe, but on the other hand...
Well, on the other hand, they were sent all over the country to households who often weren't expecting them, and the children themselves didn't know where they were going, they didn't know which town they were going to, who they would be staying with, whether they would be staying with friends or even their siblings. It was extraordinary.
And there were a lot of schemers. There were families who would take them in just because it increased their food coupons.
There were indeed. And in fact, quite a lot of the research for my book, well, it certainly started with a newspaper called the St. Albans Advertiser. And I kept on stumbling across scams. I've got one here, actually. This is directly from the newspaper. "She has shown considerable ingenuity by her forgeries. Giving a false address and using the names of children that do not exist made the matter very difficult to detect." This was somebody called Doris Evelyn Hart, who was claiming a billeting allowance for 6 children who weren't staying with her. And this was very common because you got actually a decent weekly wage for taking in an evacuated child.
The schemes that that V and Noel eventually come up with, they begin collecting for the Dunkirk Widows and Orphans Fund.
That's right.
Which is their own pockets. They're illegal, but were they wrong?
That's the whole dilemma. It's wrong, but Noel decides it is a lesser wrong than a crime he stumbles upon later in the book, because it hurts no one. And it's this distinction between legally wrong and morally wrong which sets the whole plot on course in the second half, when V and Noel come across someone who really is causing pain and trouble to other people by their illegal activities.
You have written books for adults, young adults, and readers who were children.
I have.
And, my gosh, you've had an interesting career.
Well, I did science at school, largely, when I was a teenager, and I became a doctor. I did 5 years of medical school and became a doctor, mm-hmm. and was terrified for every single second of my medical career. I seemed to emerge from medical school with a qualification, but nevertheless, I seemed to know nothing and was so scared. And patients,
forgive me, I'm so glad I didn't blunder into your practice.
Well, do you know, patients liked me because I was really jolly and nice. And what they didn't realise was they'd probably been much better off with a sort of mumbling introvert who actually knew something. And in fact, I dreaded it. And my only happy day as a doctor was one sunny summer day where we got no admissions at all. And I sat on the lawn outside the hospital and read The Longest Journey by E.M. Forster. It was the only happy day. And in the end, I didn't go back. And I thought, well, what can I do? I'm not qualified for anything else. I thought the only thing I've done is comedy. And I applied for and got a job with BBC Light Entertainment in radio.
I am among those that think that British humour is one of the great forces for civilization in the world. but that being noted, it must be rough to a challenge to take a comic approach to the Blitz, which is in a sense the great national heroic story of Britain.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I suppose this is the way I write. It's not that I see humour in everything, but that most people do see humour in even the saddest things. And what was so extraordinary about the Blitz and what attracted me to it was the idea of ordinary people trying to do ordinary things in an extraordinary situation. And some of those ordinary things are making jokes, going to the cinema, going to the theatre.
Yeah.
And the book before Crooked Heart was called Their Finest Hour and a Half. And that was about the making of a feature film, because I very much wanted to write about what it was like to be behind the scenes. And then I stumbled across a fantastic quote by a pre-war actor, which said, "Once work begins in studio, nothing outside is of any relative importance." And I thought, gosh, that's so true. But what about during the war when there are actually bombs falling outside? And I started researching and I discovered that there was no difference at all. Even in the middle of the Blitz, it still took, you know, 12 people to decide the colour of the leading man's tie. It was still ridiculously solipsistic. And people still cracked jokes and people still were sarcastic and rude and funny. That didn't change at all.
That's what got them through.
I think it was, yes. I think that's striving for the ordinary.
Lissa Evans, her new book, Crooked Heart, comes out next week. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.